Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 256. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about ancient cities, tombs, palaces, and scrolls as we go to the West Bank and the Palestinian Authority. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have two news stories for you. Probably the travel news this week was dominated by the TSA and the controversy over the full-body scanners, but they came out with a lesser-known document this week, which is a document talks about which foods you should not travel with over the holidays. And mostly these are obvious things. They are things that are either liquids or gelatinous in nature, and they want to remind you to put them into your checked bags or ship them ahead of time or leave them at home. And they're cranberry sauce and cologne, creamy dips, gravy, jams, jellies, lotions, all sorts of things that are obvious. But the thing that they miss that you should never travel with over the holidays is fruitcake. And then the second story is a sad one. A couple missed their honeymoon because the dog ate their passport, or at least ate the husband's passport. Newlyweds Eric Mann and Brooke Blue missed their paid-in-advance beach holiday vacation in Cancun, according to USA Today, and they're out $1,500 because the dog ate Mann's passport. The problems didn't start immediately, according to the report, because the barcode in the photo remained intact, and so they were able to get through security at Logan Airport. But when they got to Cancun, immigration officials were suspicious because of the bite marks and sent them back to Boston. You have to hope they really love that pooch. For links to both of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome the show Matthew Long from landlopers.com, who's come to talk to us about the West Bank. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Happy to be here.
And when we say the West Bank, we're not talking about the West Bank of the Seine. We're talking about the West Bank of the Jordan River. And it's not actually a country yet, depending on who you ask, right?
That's right. It's loosely called the Palestinian Authority. And that includes not only the West Bank, but also Golan Heights and then the Gaza Strip.
Okay. And we're talking about traveling to there. This is something that you're actually recommending more as a series of day trips, was my impression, from Jerusalem.
That's correct, for a few reasons. One, the West Bank and most of the sites and areas of interest to a visitor there is very, very close to Jerusalem. Jericho is probably about a 20-minute drive, and Bethlehem, depending on security, is about the same. So it's very, very convenient to get to. And it's actually much easier to stay in Jerusalem than it is within the West Bank itself. There are a couple of hotels, one in Bethlehem and one in Jericho, the Intercontinental. But it's really not recommended, especially for Americans or Canadians, to actually stay there overnight. With Bethlehem, it's recommended they have a guide. Jericho is possible for an independent traveler. But as always, it's a situation where you really just need to pay attention to politics and what the current restrictions are.
You were saying that 20 minutes, not counting security, how long is the security wait? My impression is that depends a lot on what time you go.
It does. And to go to Jericho, it was hardly anything. The van stopped briefly. An Israeli soldier came on and waved us on. That was about it. One thing you do need to make sure that you have with you is you always need to have your passport when you're going to any of the Palestinian Authority areas. Bethlehem, it's about the same. It really does depend on time of day and how many buses are in front of you, because they're biblical and archaeological importance. Obviously, both Jericho and Bethlehem are high priority for a lot of tour groups.
And then let's get into that. What would you recommend that we see in the West Bank? And what kind of itinerary would you give for us?
Well, I would split it up between doing at least 2 to 3 day trips from Jerusalem. The first is a good, I think, introduction to the West Bank, and that would be simply a visit to Bethlehem. Within Bethlehem, you have the Church of the Nativity, the Milk Grotto, and several areas of obvious importance to those of the Christian faith. It's an interesting area. For travelers who haven't been to areas of the Middle East before, it's a good introduction. And when you get there, Bethlehem and Jericho are, I think, very different from a tourist point of view. Bethlehem does tend to be a little bit more kitschy. And, you know, I talked to several people who didn't actually have the best encounters there, but they were very glad to have gone, not only for the importance of it, but to see an area within the West Bank that they can get to and talk with some people from there.
So when you say kitschy, so when I was in Egypt, everybody wanted to sell me a plastic pyramid. You're saying here it's a plastic creche.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Okay.
And the shops around the central market area all very much play into this. But the history is significant. Obviously, the first church was built on this site in the 4th century. And there's always been some sort of creation at that site ever since. And it's interesting, it's been spared many times from many different invaders. There's actually, within the church, there was an ancient mosaic. And at the time, it was depicting the three wise men from the east. Well, east meant Persia. And so they were painted, and the mosaic was done with Persian garb. But then when the Persians invaded, they didn't understand the significance of it, but they saw people dressed like themselves. And so it's the only church they spared. And so it's interesting how history has treated this town.
Now, you talk about the early history and the Christian history, obviously well before this was the city of Jesus, this was the city of David. Is there much pre-Christian back into the deep Jewish roots of the town? Or is anything left from that era?
Well, there is. There's Rachel's tomb right outside the city, the famous, I suppose you would say, biblical matriarch. She's the only matriarch, or patriarch for that matter, of royal lineage buried outside of Hebron. And so a lot of very ardent Jews make it to this site, not only for prayer, but also if they're having bad luck with fertility. So
okay.
That's where they need to go.
Rachel, who herself had bad luck with fertility. Okay, got it.
Exactly. So absolutely. And throughout this region, one trend I did see throughout the West Bank is that there are countless sites. But because of the history in the past 50 years, they really haven't been well taken care of. And they're starting to change that a little bit. And they're starting to interpret the history for people because they're realizing that they're getting more and more tourists into the West Bank area.
Things have gotten more stable, you're saying, and tourism has opened up. That's bringing an additional revenue source to the West Bank.
Absolutely.
What sort of sites are just starting to get tourism then?
Well, Bethlehem has had tourism for a long time. And
sure.
In Jericho itself, which is an interesting stop, you have the old town, quote-unquote, of Jericho, where the walls came tumbling down. And then right outside that, though, you have a palace dating from about, I think it's the 5th century. It's called Hisham's Palace. And right now it looks a lot like rubble, but they've started doing a really good job of not only excavation, but historical interpretation for people. And so when you get there, you get to see some of the most incredible mosaics anywhere in the world. You get to see some of the most incredible architecture from a part of history that had been long lost. Talking about the Umayyad dynasty, the same folks that built Dome of the Rock.
Huh.
It was an impressive dynasty. And this palace, located right outside Jericho, was a very important place for them. And it was a central focus of their dynasty.
Okay, so this is part of the Islamic history of the area.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct. And that's not something I was expecting. I had known some things to expect, but I was not expecting that. And they've done a really nice job of, they have a brief 10-minute movie for folks to teach them a little bit more about the Islamic history, because that is one thing that does tend to be lost sometimes.
And where would we go next?
Well, I want to take us closer to Jericho City. I have mixed opinions about this. A very common stop is what they call the ruins of Old Jericho. And just coincidentally, I'm sure, adjacent to it is a Danny Tourist Center. And so all the guides will stop there. And they say, here, you can go shop, you can have lunch, and by the way, we also have this ancient city of Jericho. And so I did, went up to the ancient city. Unfortunately, it's one of those examples where nothing really has been done. It's been roped off. There's been some excavation, but there's very little interpretation. And it's very hard for the visitor to know what they're looking at without some sort of detailed guide they've gotten from somewhere else. It does offer a really great panoramic view of modern-day Jericho, though, which was nice, and I suppose worth the 10 shekel entrance fee. But I was disappointed at this site because they want it to be all about old Jericho, but there's nothing about old Jericho there. Instead, it's a sponsored tourist stop with several stores and one restaurant inside. And you feel trapped. You really do. But close by to that, interesting enough, is Mounts of Temptation. They have a cable car you can take from the tourist spot up to the mountain. And that offers amazing views of the valley and nearby desert. And once you're up there, you can also get a closer view of the 19th century Greek Orthodox cemetery, the Quantrall, which is just a gorgeous building. It's built right into the rock face, into the cliff face of the Mount of Temptation. And so it's hit and miss, Jericho. I enjoyed being there, and I enjoyed seeing some of the things I did, but I also really did not like the heavy-hitting shop by eat now.
Now, given the fact that you were getting that, you were on a guided tour.
That's correct.
And did you arrange that ahead of time, or did you find one in Jerusalem? Do you have one you would recommend, or it sounds like possibly one you would recommend against?
They're a good tour company, yes. I went with a tour company that was done through a company called New Jerusalem Tours, and they're the company that they do free walking tours in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, and then they work in cooperation with independent traveling tours in Israel. And they have many options for day trips all around the country and outside. And I did like the itinerary. It was a good itinerary. It was reasonably priced, and it was much easier for me to have them take me than rent an expensive car and try and not get lost in the West Bank. Everyone stops, though, at this stop. There's really no avoiding it.
Okay.
And so it's not a slight against the company. It's a little bit of a slight against the way the Palestinian Authority has done some of their tourism.
Okay. Which will probably improve over time, sure.
That's right. That's right. They're new to the game. I think they see some easy sponsorships, and they go with them, not realizing that may not be best in the long term for them.
Sure.
If you do one of these tours, though, or even not, even if you're independent and you do have a car, there's another location in the West Bank that's very close by called Qumran, which is where the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered.
Right, sure.
And it's a national park, and they've done a really nice job of telling the history of it and explain to people what actually the scrolls are, who wrote them, and why. And they take you through. There's a small museum and a 10-15-minute movie, which is really well done, actually. And then you get to walk around the area. Of course, the caves are high up in the cliffs, so you don't actually go into any of the caves, but you can see the caves. And you also have great, great views of the Dead Sea. And so it's a neat feeling to be there, standing in the ruin of it was an old monastery, really.
Right.
And you know, just soaking in the history. It's mind-boggling.
Okay. And do they talk about why they disappeared? Because I know there are a few theories on that.
The Dead Sea Scrolls?
No, the people of Qumran.
Well, they were an interesting sect.
Right.
And they were a little extreme even for their day. And they were in the middle of nowhere, which is still the middle of nowhere. And the one that I had heard was that they were targeted. I don't know if that's what you're alluding to.
I think there are a couple different theories. I think one popular theory is that they had joined their lot with the Zealots who had rebelled against Rome and had died at Masada, but I don't think anybody really knows for sure.
Right.
But they disappeared around that time in the first century.
Well, that's right, when the Romans overtook the area. And they were extreme, just like the folks at Masada. They were on the fringe.
Right, sure.
You know, and it's interesting. You see different translations refer to them as rebels, heroes. It's interesting to see, depending on the translation, how they're referred to.
Right. I think all we know for sure is that sometime during the first Roman-Jewish war, and there were three, by the way, but that they disappeared. So whether they were targeted or joined their lot and committed suicide on top of Masada, we don't know.
Right.
Interesting. And where else did you go?
Well, it's a full day when you do this. We also did go to Masada, which is not in the West Bank, which is very close, and then to the Dead Sea, which is a very, very popular spot. If you're in the area, you have no choice but to stop and try your hand at floating. And it makes for a good 12 to 14-hour day once you're done.
And my understanding is you say try your hand at floating, that it's not that difficult, but you don't want to have a scrape or a cut on your leg or something like that.
That's right. That's right. What's harder to do in the Dead Sea is actually to stand up, because the body keeps wanting to bob up. And so it's infinitely easier to try to float your way in and just go with it. But you're right, having a cut or any kind of abrasion, or it's recommended you do not shave that day.
Oh,
otherwise,
wow.
You'll be in for an unpleasant experience. but it's a very popular. I was there on a Saturday. It was very popular, not just with tourists, and people were just out there enjoying the warm weather and sitting on the banks of the Dead Sea.
Very cool. What surprised you about the West Bank?
I think a few things surprised me. One, and this is, I think, in general, prior to my trip as well, I didn't fully understand the various rules between both Palestinians and Israelis.
Okay.
And who may travel where and when. For instance, if you do have a guide or a tour group, the Israelis aren't allowed into the Palestinian Authority. They aren't allowed into the West Bank. And so what they'll do is, at a stop like Masada, they will switch out guides.
Right.
And you'll get a Palestinian guide for the rest of your trip. That surprised me.
Well, I've always heard that if you take a Israeli taxi in, you transfer to a Palestinian taxi at the border crossing.
That's right. That's right. That's another way in. Certain areas in the West Bank are easier to do taxi-bus combinations. It's not always possible. In Jericho, you'd actually be left off, I think, 3 miles away. So I don't, not exactly. It's not great for a traveler to the West Bank for the first time. Bethlehem is much easier to get to. And I was surprised at how warm of a welcome I think we got and how many great conversations I was able to have. I don't know what I was expecting. I was expecting any kind of anti-American feelings, but I didn't get them. I got some interesting comments and some probably miscommunications, but overall, people were very happy that I was there. People were happy I was learning about the history of that area, and they were proud. They're very proud. They're fiercely proud of Shams Palace, which has been destroyed since the 7th century.
Wow.
You know, exactly. It's part of a proud history.
Sure.
And they're starting to not only rediscover it, but reclaim it.
Interesting. Well, what time of year were you there, too?
I was there in October, late October.
Okay. Good time to go?
It was a good time. It really depends. You need to look at the Jewish calendar and see when high holidays land.
Right, right.
I was not there during a high holiday, and I was not there during Ramadan. So it was a good time. It's always a very busy place. This year, Israel just announced that they set a record of tourists. They just welcomed their 3 millionth for the year. And so tourism is booming right now in Israel. The weather was great in Jerusalem, especially. It was on the warm side. It was in the 70s. It would be a little chilly at night in the mornings. Tel Aviv is different. Tel Aviv was much warmer, much more humid. It has to do with elevation more than anything else. But weather was great.
Any warnings you would give? And we talked a little bit about security, although things here are fairly calm right now.
They are fairly calm, but it is something you do need to pay attention to. I think some people who travel don't always pay attention to travel warnings. And in some cases, the warnings aren't, I wouldn't say all that important, but they may be a little bit more reactionary. In this part of the world, it is important to pay attention to politics and to warnings, because these rules can change at any time. The Palestinian Authority can change its mind about who it wants in at any time, and vice versa. As far as other warnings, I would really caution people against staying in the West Bank. We talked about this earlier. It's going to be much easier and much less hassle for you to stay in Jerusalem. If you are in the West Bank at a hotel, you're going to be fairly confined. Whereas if you're staying like in West Jerusalem or something, you can do as you wish. You know, you've got a full city right there at your disposal.
Now, you haven't had a chance to stay in the West Bank, is my understanding.
No, I did not overnight there. No.
Okay.
Although I did stay in East Jerusalem, in the Arab part of town.
In the Arab quarter?
An interesting experience.
Which is part of the West Bank Palace, or is that not? Is the border the other? I think Israel has claimed all of Jerusalem, as I recall.
That's correct.
Okay.
It is. But it's pretty much night and day between West and East Jerusalem.
It's
very surprising. It really is.
Now, we often will get more Israeli news than Palestinian news in the U.S. because we're more aligned with Israel. Were there times where you got more of an insight, even, you know, you're on a guided tour, but you've got guides who are from the West Bank, got a little more insight into either the way of life or the politics or something else than you had when you came?
Yeah, I did, actually. And I had a couple really long conversations with people who live in the West Bank. And I was surprised at some of their thoughts and feelings. I had one gentleman try to convince me that the U.S. government was behind all terrorist activities. And, you know, he wasn't a zealot. He was just a normal person. We were just chatting, and he just brought it up, you know, as a by the way. And I was very taken aback, obviously, by that. And then he talked to me, though. He talked to me about, you know, he works in Jerusalem, but lives in the West Bank, and his wife is not allowed into Jerusalem. And so if they wanted to go up to Jerome the Rock, if they wanted to do anything in East Jerusalem, she would not be allowed to. He's only allowed in because he works there and he has a work visa. That struck me, I won't say odd, it was interesting.
So you got a little view into that divided life and the divisions that happen there.
Yeah, and they are very, very real. I had dinner one night with one of the administrators of the City of David in Salon, which is a very politically charged archaeological site. And not surprisingly, her views were different. And it was interesting within the same evening talking with people from the two sides of the spectrum and to understand that they're not as close to solving anything as perhaps Americans would like to think.
The people you met, who is the most memorable person? Who stands out?
I met this gentleman at the same dinner who actually is a lobbyist of the Knesset, and he lobbies on behalf of disabled Israelis. But we spoke for probably at least 2 hours about politics, American politics, Israeli politics, and the relationship between the U.S. and Israel. And it was a very frank conversation, and it's still something I'm digesting even now. And it was just a really wonderful evening. You know, it was a great opportunity to talk to someone past the tourist veneer.
You mentioned before we started recording that you had a lot of pictures of the trip. What picture captures the West Bank for you?
Probably, I have a great picture at sunset of one of the central ramparts of Hisham's palace with the mountains in the background. And I think that that is a classic image from the West Bank, in the middle of the desert, with these ruins of a past civilization, but it's being reconstructed. And really, not to get too philosophical, but it really is a metaphor for what they're going through now and where they hopefully will be in the next 10, 20 years.
West Bank, a little different culturally. When did you feel closest to home and when did you feel furthest from home?
Furthest from home was we had to stop for gas, and it was the middle of modern day Jericho. And I've traveled to many different places around the world, but it didn't seem like anything Western. You know, it was very much third world setting, which if you think how close Jerusalem and how close even large Palestinian cities are, it's very surprising. Closest to home would have to be probably, I was sitting outside the tourist Jericho, and I bought some fresh fruit from a vendor and just sitting there and having an enjoyable afternoon.
Any times that you just had to laugh and say only in the West Bank?
Oh, it would have to be at the Temptation Center, the Ahava.
The Temptation Center. Okay.
Yes, it's sponsored by Ahava, makers of fine Dead Sea muds and cosmetics. It's got to be the Dead Sea Center. It was just the most tacky, over-the-top place I think I've ever been. And I just sat there with my Diet Coke and just snickered.
Interesting. Anything else we should know before somebody else is to follow in your footsteps and go to the West Bank?
Just to research it well, independent travel is absolutely possible, but it's got to be well thought out. It's not necessarily going to be something you just decide to do that morning. You've really got to know what you're looking at doing. If you do independent travel, rental cars, the insurance does not usually carry over into the West Bank, and so to be aware of that. And if you are going to go the guided route, do take a look at various companies and make sure, you know, be very sure what they offer. I had some surprises that morning. They threw in some extras, which was great, but I had no idea.
Like what? What was thrown in?
I had no idea that we'd be stopping at Mount Temptation. And we also had to do one of those little stops with a photo op with a camel and and a Bedouin. So it reminded me a lot of Morocco.
I understand completely.
Bedouin and the camels. But other than that, it's a great place to go and to really put politics aside and really just look at the place through your own eyes. I think that's what's key.
Excellent. Final two questions.
Mm-hmm.
Finish this sentence. You really know you're in the West Bank when what?
When you sit down for a snack of roasted nuts and pomegranate juice.
Okay. And if you had to summarize the West Bank in three words, what three words would you use?
Promising, important, and vibrant.
Excellent. Well, Matthew, thanks so much for coming on the show. So again, Matthew Long has been our guest from landlopers.com. We'll put a link in the show notes. Matthew has written a couple different blog posts for the Amateur Traveler over the years, and we will attest, I think, to how hard it is to find someplace you've been that we haven't already covered on the show. So I appreciate that you were able to contribute a show about the West Bank.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it.
In news of the community, Gabriel, or Agaguga in the discussion boards, gave a comment on the episode about the Black Hills, where I had challenged people to come up with three words for their home country or state. And his three words for Singapore are hot, humid, and engineered, which I thought was an interesting choice. I got an encouraging email from Sandra, who wrote, "Such a pleasure to be writing to you. I just wanted to let you know that I love listening to your podcasts while driving to and from work. And yes, I do go back at one point to have a look at the lovely photos and the web links. I am currently listening to episode 108, so I have a bit of catching up to do. These podcasts have sparked my love of travel again. I was traveling quite regularly from 1995 to 2005. I managed to make it to a few places in the U.S., San Francisco, Sanibel Islands, Boston, to Costa Rica. I consider it my second home, but my permanent home is Montreal, Canada, to Madrid, Rome, and finally Taiwan. Unfortunately, I've taken a break from traveling due to a shift in fiscal priorities. I can certainly understand that one. If I can't travel, I still enjoy just hearing and dreaming about it, where I could go if I could go. You put a lot of work into these podcasts and have provided your listeners with such a great product for such a long time. A great big thanks to you. I hope I can get to meet you at one point at a podcast get together. Well, thanks, Sandra. It's so encouraging to know that somebody out there is listening. And then I got an email from Patrick who said, "First, thank you tremendously for the work you do on the podcast. It brings me tons of listening pleasure. What I'm having trouble finding is a complete list on one page of all of the audio podcasts in order with a mention of the subject." Yes, you are indeed having trouble finding that. I used to have that page, and I don't remember when it was, right around 150 or 200 podcasts, it broke. It got too long, and I haven't had a chance to see if there's some way to get that to work again. It just got to be that 256 podcasts was rather a lot. And then lastly, I got an email from Paul, and Paul said, "I can't believe this day actually came. I am caught up on episodes of The Amateur Traveler. This is the first time I have ever synced my iPod and come up with no episodes to listen to. I will now have to find other podcasts to add to my list so I always have something to listen to while I'm commuting to and from work. Well, I have tried other podcasts and have a hard time getting into them. There are three podcasts that I eagerly await new episodes: Amateur Traveler, This Week in Travel, and Betty in the Sky." And for those of you who don't know, This Week in Travel is the other travel podcast that I do weekly, which is a discussion show, and Betty has been a guest on The Amateur Traveler. I find that The Amateur Traveler is organized and well done and keeps drawing me into places that guests visit. Thanks so much for all the hard work you put in The Amateur Traveler. Well, thank you, Paul. Listening to all of the episodes is hard work in itself. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have questions, feel free to send me an email to host@theamateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment where everybody can see it at amateurtraveler.com on this episode, or follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, with this being Thanksgiving, I'd like to say thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in